Under the luminous dome, the assembled crowd had been struck silent by the quick burst of violent action in front of them. Before any of them could move, Kuat of Kuat had already darted forward and snatched up the vibroblade that had fallen from Fanald's grasp. Blood trickled down his forearm and dripped from his elbow as he held the weapon up. "I would advise everyone to continue standing very still." "That goes for you as well," said Kuat. He held the vibroblade higher, its glistening point on a straight line toward the throat of Koss of K'nylan. Koss of K'nylan froze in place as though hypnotized by the sight of the blade. Kuat knew that he had only a few seconds before the K'nylans managed to break free of the shock that now held them, but that would be long enough. A blow with the point of the vibroblade pried open the front panel of the portable life support system. Kuat forced it open wide enough to get his fingers underneath the smooth edge of metal. As he strained against it, he was joined by Kodir of Kovalt. The two of them managed to pull the front panel off the machinery and drop it with an echoing clang onto the gathering place's floor. Kuat no longer needed the vibroblade and handed it to Kodir. Now he was able to reach into the workings of the life support system and disable it. "Back off!" Kodir's warning voice sounded from behind him. Kuat glanced over his shoulder and saw that with her knees bent in a defensive crouch, Kodir was using the blade to keep the K'nylans and their affiliates at bay. "Maybe you could hurry up a little," said Kodir, glancing back at Kuat. "I'm not going to be able to hold them forever." "This won't take long." A single motivator unit ran all the functions of the life support system. Kuat grasped the top of the unit, gave it a turn to the right, and yanked it out of the center of the machinery's circuits. An inhuman screech sounded from the amplified speaker mounted above. As if Kuat of Kuat had struck a blow at the heart of a living beast, the portable life support system shuddered and sank lower upon its treads, nearly toppling Koss of K'nylan from its upper platform. The gray, withered face of the K'nylan elder showed no sign of animation. As Kuat grasped the bottom edge of the cylinder and tugged it free. Inside the opened cylinder, the corpse of the K'nylan elder hung suspended. Not held upright by the tubes and wires of the life support system's various components, but by a simple leather strap crossing the body's shrunken chest. A last trace of the odor of decay had been released by the opening of the cylinder. A few of the K'nylans and their affiliates turned away in horrified disgust. The K'nylan elder had been dead for a long time, long before the portable life support system had carried the disguised corpse into the gathering place. That much was obvious. "Not a bad piece of work. Very well designed." With an engineer's clinical admiration, Kuat pointed out the rest of the details. "As you can see, there was no need to go to the expense of preserving all of the body in a lifelike state. Only the head of the elder was necessary to give the impression that he was still alive and functioning. A few simple real-time animating devices, a synthesized voice, and a database of vocabulary and mannerism, all under the control of the Level 1 droid intelligence that was supposedly monitoring the life support system's components. Basically not an elaborate construct at all, but well done, nevertheless." Kuat looked at the person standing atop the dead machinery. "I remember the K'nylan elder well. He was not a stupid individual. Whatever his own ambitions for the K'nylan household, I doubt if he could have been convinced to go along with this plan of yours." Koss of K'nylan began to ask, "Is that how..." "It was enough to arouse my skepticism," replied Kuat. "But I needed proof, and that wasn't long in coming. You programmed the droid intelligence in that device of yours pretty well, but it got the facts wrong. It would have been very difficult for the Elder to have sworn before our biological mothers that he would outlive me, since our mothers never met. Mine died in giving birth to me. So, when your phony K'nylan Elder didn't catch me out in a simple falsehood, that's when I knew it wasn't really him." One of the Katnesi looked puzzled.
"I don't understand," he said. "Why would Koss go to such elaborate lengths to make it appear that the K'nylan elder was still alive? As soon as the word of the elder's death would have gotten out, That would be when Kos would have been acknowledged as the heir of the Knylan household.
That's not difficult to figure out, Kuat smiled. It's not enough to inherit the title, when the oaths of fealty from the other ruling households were given to the person of the previous Knylan elder. None of you has ever sworn an oath to Kos of Knylan. So for Kos to proceed with his campaign to drive me out of the leadership of Kuat Drive Yards, he needed all the authority that went with the Knylan elder still being alive, without the inconvenience of the old man disagreeing with him about what should be done. The real question, of course, is, Kuat's voice darkened, just how convenient was the elder's death? Perhaps our dear cousin Kos might have helped the process along just a little bit. That's a lie! Kos of Knylan's face had paled to a bloodless white. If you're saying I killed him, that I had anything to do with his death...
A very serious charge, said the Khanesi. He nodded solemnly, a gesture that was repeated by others in the crowd, including the Knylans and their associates. This will bear investigation. And if it should turn out to be true...
Then the murderer's own life is forfeited.
Kodir of Kulvolt spoke the words.
It's a capital crime for a designated heir to take an elder's life, and the punishment must be exacted, or the households would be awash in the blood of the victims. Atop the disabled machinery, the ruined manifestation of his scheme, Kos was reduced to sputtering incoherence, his fists clenched as his face distorted with the rage of the impotent and guilty.
"Let me know," said Kuat, coldly turning to the gathered households and their associates, "what you decide about him. It would probably be best for Kuat Driveyard's public relations if the execution were performed in as quiet a manner as possible. This kind of squabbling within the ranks is always seen as a weakness by outsiders."
He turned and strode away toward the gathering place's exit. Fenald had just started to regain consciousness and feebly raised a hand toward Kuat as he passed by. Kodir planted the sole of her boot in the man's chest and knocked him back against the floor.
"I don't think the Kuat household is going to be needing your services any more."
Kodir smiled as she looked over at Kuat of Kuat.
"I'd say the chances are good that there's going to be a new head of security at Kuat Drive Yards."
She set her fists against her hips and regarded Kuat with her head tilted to one side.
"And so..."
He looked back at her for only a second before making his decision.
"All right," said Kuat of Kuat.
He nodded toward the exit and the corridor leading to the docking area. "The ship's waiting." Kodir of Kuvolt leaned back in the passenger area seat next to Kuat.
"You're wondering if I'm qualified for the job?"
She smiled at him.
"How much more proof do I need to give you?"
"None."
Kuat shook his head. "You had enough moves back there at the ruling household's gathering place to indicate that you know how to act in an emergency. And you hadn't gone along with the others and fallen for that scheme of Kos's. But there's more to determine than just your qualifications. I need to know exactly why you would want to be the security head for Kuat Drive Yards."
Kodir gave a shrug. "There's all sorts of answers I could give you. Maybe I should just say that wanting to be where the action is, that's sort of a Kovolt household trait."
"If you just want action, go join the Rebel Alliance, then you get all the action you could ever want.
Saving our own skins is also something of a trait with Kuvolts."
Kodir shook her head.
"I don't know if going up against the Empire is compatible with long-term survival."
"I don't know anymore if being on the Emperor's side is good for one's health."
An old familiar weight pressed again on Kuat of Kuat's shoulders.
"The loyalty that Emperor Palpatine extracts from his followers is not the loyalty of free creatures. It's no more than the fear shown by slaves."
"It would be worth your life," Kodir spoke quietly, "if I were to make your sentiments known to the Emperor."
"But you're not going to."
All smiles had faded.
from both his face and hers. "Which means either that you're not afraid of Palpatine, or you're loyal enough to me, or..."
"There always seems to be another or."
"It's a complicated galaxy we live in," said Kuat.
"Or you have your own reasons for being on my side. Things you want, that you would be more likely to achieve if I were to stay healthy and in charge of Kuat Drive Yards."
He peered closer at Kodir.
"So, exactly what is it that you want?"
"Answers." "One word," flatly stated. Kuat nodded in appreciation.
"Then ask away."
A moment passed before she spoke. Then,
"What happened to the dancing girl at the palace of Jabba the Hutt?"
It took Kuat a moment to recall what she was talking about. The hologram, he finally realized. Kodir had watched that hologram-within-hologram replay of the past events at Jabba's palace and had seen something that she considered important. But what?
"She must have died," said Kuat,
"when Jabba threw her to his pet rancor beast."
"Not that dancing girl. The other one. The other pretty one that you could see off to the side. That's the one I want to know about."
Kuat searched his memory, trying to dredge up details that he had previously considered unimportant.
"You're right," he said, nodding slowly. "I guess there was another dancing girl there."
Kuat shrugged.
"Jabba always kept a small troop of them in the palace. It wasn't the kind of position that came with a high life expectancy attached."
"I know she's alive." Kodir's words came through her tightly clenched teeth.
"I can feel it, even this far away."
Puzzled, Kuat looked at the young woman sitting beside him. A few more pieces fell into place as he now managed to recall the face of the other pretty dancing girl.
"Yes," said Kodir softly.
She had obviously discerned the realization in Kuat's eyes, his sudden awareness of the familial resemblance.
"The girl, the other one there in Jabba's palace, she is of my blood, my family, the household of Kulvalt. That's how I know she's still alive. She has to be."
There was more, Kuat knew. Now he spoke softly, almost tenderly.
"What is her name?"
Kodir squeezed her eyes shut as she answered.
"Her true name is Katil of Kuvalt. But when she was but a child, and speaking as a child does, she couldn't pronounce such a name. She would just say Mila instead. And that is what we called her."
Kuat regarded the woman beside him with something close to pity.
"And you think I can help you find her?"
"No, you will." Kodir turned a fierce gaze toward him.
"I don't have any doubt about that."
A glance out the viewport beside Kuat showed that the Kuat Drive Yard's docking area was already in sight. He turned back to Kodir.
"My resources and my time are limited. I have more pressing concerns."
"No, you don't." Kodir spoke with ominous certainty.
"I assure you, there's nothing more important for you than this."
"You seem pretty confident about it." Another nod from her.
"I have reasons to be."
Kuat raised an eyebrow.
"Such as?" "Very simple," said Kodir, "and very compelling reasons. I have very good sources of information. I know at least some of what you've been up to."
"Koss of K'nylan was right when he made his accusations that your schemes and plans had gotten you and Kuat Drive Yards into some pretty dangerous territory with the Empire and the Black Sun organization. But Koss wasn't aware of what I've been able to find out about those schemes of yours. For someone as close to the Empire as you are, it was possible to analyze the situation and deduce that the greatest immediate threat to the independence of Kuat Drive Yards was not Emperor Palpatine, but his underling, Prince Shizor."
"Exactly so."
Even the name of the Foline nobleman set a hard stone of resentment in Kuat's gut.
"Shizor coveted the power and the capabilities of Kuat Drive Yards. If he'd been able to supply evidence, either the truth or his own brand of lies, that the leadership of Kuat Drive Yards had been disloyal to the Empire, then Palpatine would have seized the corporation. We would have been taken over and crushed beneath the Empire's heel, as other worlds had been. as all worlds will be if Palpatine has his way.
But your scheme against Prince Shizor was a failure. Now you're left with the job of cleaning up the pieces that were left behind. You did a nice job, from what I've been able to find out, putting together something that would have wound up involving Prince Shizor in some heavy difficulties. A neat way of indicating, just subtly enough so it wouldn't seem like a plant, that Prince Shizor had somehow been involved in an Imperial Stormtrooper raid on a Tatooine moisture farm. A raid in which Luke Skywalker's only family, the aunt and uncle who had raised him from infancy, were gruesomely killed. So there would be a good chance that Skywalker would set out to settle the score with Shizor. He'd be taking care of his personal accounts while also helping the Rebel Alliance by going after one of Emperor Palpatine's main henchmen. Kodir smiled in grim appreciation. Only it was supposed to be you who'd be the one who would really benefit from all that.
That's right, said Kuat. Me and Kuat Driveyards.
Of course. Even if Skywalker didn't succeed in eliminating Prince Shizor, he'd have been more than enough distraction to have kept Shizor from advancing his own schemes against Kuat Driveyards, at least for a little while. With one hand, Kodir touched Kuat lightly on the shoulder. Now, it's your life that's in danger, Kuat of Kuat. Your life and everything you value. If Emperor Palpatine were to come into possession of that manufactured evidence, he would know immediately that it was false. He already knows that the late Prince Shizor had nothing to do with that raid on the moisture farm on Tatooine, so he would hunt for whomever had falsified the evidence, and it would inevitably be traced back to you, Kuat. She slowly shook her head. It's not likely that the Emperor would look with forgiveness upon those kinds of schemes taking place under his very nose. He will extract a high price from the perpetrator and get two things thereby, vengeance and Kuat Driveyards for himself. The thought that his own hands and mind would be the instruments that brought about the destruction of his beloved Kuat Driveyards had set a raging spirit loose inside Kuat of Kuat. I congratulate you, Kodir of Kuvalt, he said aloud. Carefully, so that his movements would not be discerned, Kuat reached one hand down into a small storage pocket at the side of the passenger seat. You do, indeed, have much to bargain with. To ensure my assistance in tracking down this sister of yours... His hand closed around a grip of cold metal. But as you say, I need to eliminate any evidence that would damn me in the eyes of Emperor Palpatine. He pulled the blaster pistol from the storage pocket, brought it up, and aimed it straight between the eyes of the female sitting next to him. Consider yourself honored that you'll be the first evidence that I'll have taken care of. Really, you know too much for me to let you go on living. Kodir didn't try to make a grab for the weapon or duck out of the way of its lethal beam. Caught in the confines of her passenger seat, she would have had no chance of accomplishing either. Instead, she slammed the butt of one hand against the thin structural panel ahead of the seats. That motion was just enough to instinctively draw Kuat's sight for a microsecond. Before he could snap his gaze back to Kodir, her other hand had grabbed the front of the robe that he was still wearing, and she pulled Kuat toward herself. The press of their bodies together forced his pinioned arm upward. The hand holding the blaster jerked toward the ceiling of the passenger area. Her other forearm clubbed him across the neck and the side of his jaw. The blow was strong enough to lift him partway out of the seat. Dazed, Kuat barely managed to keep himself from toppling into the passenger area's narrow aisle. Kuat shook his eyesight back into focus. When his vision cleared, he saw Kodir holding the blaster pistol. From where she sat, she didn't bother holding the blaster on Kuat. The weapon sat loosely in her palm as she regarded him. I think, said Kodir, we understand each other better now.
Yes. Kuat slowly nodded. The whole side of his jaw ached.
We certainly do.
The personal transport docked. Summoned by Kuat, a pair of administrators from the corporation's security division accompanied their new head of operations to her offices. Kodir's duties were to begin immediately. Even before he had returned to his private quarters and was alone again, Kuat's thoughts had returned to the bounty hunter Boba Fett.
The key, mused Kuat of Kuat. He is still the key.
To the present and the future, if there was going to be one, of Kuat Driveyards, and to that past that now seemed more mysterious than it had before. Kuat sat down in the chair by his lab bench. In darkness, he thought about the bounty hunter and the past.
Then.
So, how do you think the job went?
The Trandoshan bounty hunter Bosk stood at the rear of Slave One's cockpit. Boba Fett's visored gaze turned round from the ship's controls.
I see no need, he said evenly, for any kind of analysis on this operation. We got the hard merchandise we came for, and...
Even hidden by the helmet of the Mandalorian battle armor, Fett's gaze seemed to sharpen.
Nobody died in the process.
We came close, though,
thought Bosk grumpily. If neither he nor Boba Fett had been killed while capturing the renegade Imperial Stormtrooper Terhin Vasont, they had come as close to it as possible without actually winding up as blank-eyed corpses on that crummy mining planet they had just left.
So, that's it.
Bosk watched as Boba Fett turned back toward the cockpit controls.
Nothing else?
There's no more to be discussed.
Boba Fett's shoulders lifted in a slight shrug.
All that's left is payday.
He leaned forward, the forefinger of one gloved hand punching some new numbers into the navicomputer.
If it's important to you, then you could say our partnership, our temporary partnership, has been a success.
I'm glad you think so.
Bosk drew something from his belt and set its point with a sharp metallic click against the back of Boba Fett's helmet.
Because I'm ending that partnership right now.
Boba Fett turned his head and found himself gazing into the muzzle of Bosk's blaster pistol. Bosk gestured with the weapon.
Stand up. Don't try anything. This blaster's got a hair trigger, and so do I.
With his free hand, he reached out and grabbed the various larger weapons from where they were slung at Boba Fett's back. He tossed them into the far corner of the cockpit, safely out of reach. Bracing the muzzle of the blaster between the other's shoulder blades, Bosk snapped the control lines for Fett's wrist and forearm-mounted weapons. All the time he had been aboard Slave One, he had been carefully observing Fett for indications of any hidden gadgets. Now, as he stepped back from him, Bosk was sure that he had been completely disarmed.
All right, said Bosk.
He drew back into the space outside the cockpit's hatchway, still aiming the blaster at Boba Fett.
Time to head below.
Fett was halfway down the ladder's metal treads when he stopped and looked up at Bosk holding the blaster on him.
Of course you realize, said Boba Fett mildly, that you're taking some pretty big chances here. This is my ship. It's as much a part of me as any of those weapons you just took from me. Do you really think I don't have other means of defense close at hand?
Not now, you don't.
Bosk reached with his free hand into one of his belt pouches. He brought out a fistful of miniaturized power sources, trigger mechanisms, and sensor relays.
I've kept myself busy while I've been here on Slave One. I've had a good look around, and I came prepared to make a few little changes of my own. Let me tell you, pal, you don't have any tricks left up your sleeve.
Bosk motioned with the barrel of the blaster.
Keep going.
When Boba Fett reached the bottom of the ladder and stepped away from it, Bosk jumped, landing bent-kneed and immediately snapping the blaster's aim at the center of Fett's visored helmet.
Boba Fett folded his arms across his chest. I congratulate you. You must have been planning this for some time.
You got that right. I was planning it even before I came and had my little talk with you, when you agreed to go in with me on this job. As nice as getting half the bounty for this particular piece of merchandise might have been, there won't be anything nicer than getting all the credits.
Which is what you wanted from the beginning.
Boba Fett slowly shook his head.
Not much of a partnership.
Yeah, right.
Bosk sneered at him.
the Turnabout Sphere play. You trusted me as your partner the same way the old Bounty Hunters Guild trusted you when you came around and applied for membership. When all along you were planning on sinking a vibroblade in our collective back.
Who told you that?
Nobody had to tell me, Fett. I could figure it out on my own.
Bossk tightened his grip on the blaster pistol.
All I needed was some confirmation of my suspicions, and I got that through some contacts inside Black Sun.
To make a few credits, they were happy to give me some interesting tidbits about what their boss, Prince Shizor, was hoping to do to the guild.
Boba Fett's helmet turned to one side as if the eyes behind the dark visor were peering harder at Bossk. What's Shizor got to do with all this?
Don't play dumb with me, Fett. I don't have time for it. And as a matter of fact, neither do you.
Bossk kept the blaster aimed at the other bounty hunter and used his free hand to gesture toward the cargo area's exterior airlock.
We're surrounded by vacuum now, Fett. Take a deep breath, because it'll be your last. Get moving. You know the way out.
Your thoroughness is commendable.
Boba Fett took a step toward the hatchway.
I've been cornered inside my own ship before, but I've never had Slave One's internal defense systems disabled. That's a new one.
He brought his visored helmet's level gaze straight toward Bossk.
It's just a shame that you didn't think of everything.
Boba Fett reached up and tapped the side of his helmet.
You left my comm system functioning.
Careful, Bossk warned himself. The Barf's playing mind games with you. Big deal, he said aloud. Who are you going to call for help? So, go on, have enough guts to get into the airlock on your own power.
Boba Fett made no reply. Bossk thought he heard a muffled whisper, as though Fett had spoken into the comm concealed inside his helmet. A few seconds passed. Then Bossk knew for sure that he had heard something. One of the storage lockers behind him had opened, its metal door unsealing and lifting upward.
Nice try.
Bossk didn't bother to turn around.
I expected better from you than just trying to divert my attention with a little comm-triggered noise.
Okay, is this better?
He was surprised to hear another voice speaking, and from right behind him. Bossk was even more surprised when he felt the unmistakable cold pressure of a blaster pistol's muzzle placed against the back of his head.
That was when he recognized the other voice.
Suckers!
The blaster muzzle didn't move from the base of his skull.
That's right,
said Zuckus, still behind him.
Now, why don't you lower your weapon? I really don't like you pointing it at my partner.
I'll take it. Boba Fett stepped forward and removed the blaster from Bossk's slackened grip. He gestured with it toward the holding cage. Stand over there.
Bossk muttered a string of guttural Trandoshan curses as he backed toward the vertical durasteel bars. His eyes narrowed into slits as he gazed at Zuckus.
You weren't dead at all.
I try to avoid it when I can.
The blaster in Zuckus's hand was reflected in his large insect-like eyes.
Though for one of my species, it's pretty easy to imitate.
He pulled two miniature cylinders of compressed ammonia from the dangling tubes of his breathing apparatus.
When you come from a planet like Gand, where we've got both ammonia breathers and oxygen breathers, you have to be adaptable. In an oxygen-rich environment, I can shut down all respiration and external vital signs. Usually, just for a couple of minutes. But, with a couple of these...
Zuckus held up the cylinders.
I can go for days like that. It's actually kind of relaxing.
And useful, said Boba Fett. I've discovered that when dealing with Trandoshans, it's good to have another partner on hand.
Bossk didn't know which of the two figures in front of him he despised more.
How could you do this?
He snarled at Zuckus.
We've worked together. We've been real partners.
Business is business.
Zuckus gave a slight shrug.
And you?
Bossk turned his red-tinged gaze toward Boba Fett.
This is what you are planning all along, isn't it?
Just as you were making your own plans.
Boba Fett tucked into his belt the blaster pistol he had taken from Bosk. He reached his empty hand over toward Zuckuss, standing beside him. "Give me your blaster."
"Huh?"
Zuckuss's large eyes goggled at him in puzzlement.
"Why?"
"Just give it to me."
Zuckuss handed the weapon over.
"Thanks."
Boba Fett did a quick check of the blaster's power cell, then raised and pointed it at Zuckuss.
"You can go over there with Bosk, or I can kill you right where you're standing. Your pick."
"I thought..."
Zuckuss shook his head in dismay as he joined Bosk at the side of Slave One's cargo area.
"I thought we were partners."
"That was your mistake."
Boba Fett kept both of them covered with the blaster. He turned his gaze toward Bosk.
"Your mistake was in thinking that I would trust you. I could figure out from the beginning that you were planning on eliminating me as soon as we had the hard merchandise safely in our possession."
"All right,"
Bosk nodded as he spread his hands apart.
"You can't blame me for trying, and I did help you catch Vasant. So, how about if we just forget this part of my plan, and we go ahead and turn him in to Kudar Mubat and split the bounty 50-50, just like we were originally going to do?"
"Hey!"
Zuckuss's voice squeaked in protest.
"What about me? What do I get?"
"I think Zuckuss has a point."
Having a blaster pointed at him had sent Bosk's thoughts racing.
"Fair's fair, after all."
Bosk stepped behind Zuckuss and placed both his clawed hands on the smaller bounty hunter's shoulders.
"After all, we weren't trying to do anything different from you. You know, just playing to win."
"You're right."
The blaster didn't waver in Boba Fett's grip.
"You played to win, and I played to win. The difference is, I won."
Bosk didn't say anything more. Instead, in one quick move, he lifted Zuckuss bodily from the floor of the cargo area and threw him at Boba Fett. Even before Zuckuss's flailing, panicked form struck Fett, Bosk was heading in a crouched-over sprint for the other side of the ship. He wasn't even sure that the auxiliary escape pod was in operational order, but it was still worth the try. Hot sparks lashed across his spine as a blaster bolt hit the bulkhead above him. The escape pod's hatch popped open, and he threw himself headfirst into its dark, cramped space.
"You're not going anywhere, Bosk. I've already signaled the cockpit and overridden that pod's launch sequence."
The blaster in Fett's hand was level with the exact center of the pod's hatch.
"That's a dead end for you, literally."
"Maybe so."
Bosk quickly searched through the pouches off his belt. He found the small object, one of the pieces of equipment that he had extracted from Slave One's circuits. When he pushed a button on top of the small cylinder, a row of tiny red lights began flashing down its side. Keeping his thumb on the button, he held it out so that Boba Fett would be able to see it through the open hatch.
"I'm not going unless I can take everybody else with me."
He held the flashing cylinder a little higher.
"A miniature thermal detonator." Fett shook his head. "You can blow yourself up with that thing, but it's not powerful enough to take out this entire ship."
"It doesn't have to."
Bosk stayed prudently back from the edge of the escape pod's open hatch.
"All it has to do is blow out a big enough gap in the side of the hull, and you're going to have a hard time making it back to Kudar Mubat's web without laying over for some lengthy repairs. And you and I both know that the word has already gotten out about our having captured Tahin Vasant. Do you really want to be sitting out in the middle of empty space in a crippled ship, while every bounty hunter in the galaxy heads this way to try and lift that valuable piece of hard merchandise off you?"
Boba Fett was silent for a few seconds. Then he gave a single nod.
"All right," he said. "I'll make a deal with you. I'll activate the pod's launch sequence and you go. But when we cross paths again, then you'd better be ready."
"Don't worry. I will be."
"Engage the safety on the detonator and toss it out here."
"You've got to be kidding."
Bosk barked out a short laugh.
"I'll deactivate this thing when I'm safely on my way, and not a second earlier than that."
"As you wish."
Boba Fett reached down with his free hand and grabbed Zuckuss under the arm.
"Come on, you're going traveling too."
What are you...
Zuckuss sputtered in confusion as Boba Fett dragged him toward the emergency escape pod.
But you owe me...
"And I'm paying off the debt."
Boba Fett kicked Zuckuss inside the pod with a single boot thrust.
"I'm letting you live."
Bossk shoved Zuckuss aside as the hatch began to seal shut. He had one last glimpse of Boba Fett's cold, visored gaze, and then he threw the detonator outside just as the hatch clicked shut. The violent shockwave of the detonator's explosion back aboard Slave One tumbled Bossk and Zuckuss inside the pod as it shot away from the ship.
What did you do that for?
Zuckuss hunched himself over to one side of the cramped space.
If that thing had gone off a half second sooner, we wouldn't have gotten away.
We wouldn't have gotten away either if Boba Fett had been able to turn his ship around and blow us to bits with one of his laser cannons.
Bossk leaned forward, wrapping his heavily muscled arms around his knees.
I wanted to make sure that he was good and distracted until we were safely out of firing range.
Oh, good thinking.
Zuckuss shifted about, trying to make room for himself.
Where do you think this thing is going to wind up?
Who knows?
Such devices were programmed to seek out and head for the nearest habitable planet.
We'll find out when we get there.
The only thing Bossk did know, a perfect certainty in the brooding silence that filled his heart and every other space inside him, was that one way or another, sooner or later, he would find his way back to Boba Fett.
And then,
he vowed,
that Barb is going to pay.
Even before Slave One's internal pressure had been stabilized, Boba Fett had been at work minimizing the explosion's effects. The helmet of his Mandalorian battle armor contained its own emergency air supply. He had been more concerned with the welfare of the hard merchandise inside the cargo area's holding cage. The ex-stormtrooper Tahin Vasant was only valuable if he stayed alive. Fett had grabbed an oxygen canister from one of the storage lockers, then reached into the cage and fastened its tethered mask over Vasant's gasping face. Taking care of the merchandise had prevented Boba Fett from retaliating at the departed Bossk. Just as well, thought Fett. Mere vengeance was never a priority with him, and certainly not worth any time pursuing. The explosion had severely weakened the ship's tight-angle thruster ports and maneuvering capabilities. The stress of a jump into hyperspace would rip some of the control surfaces completely loose from the hull. Slave One could make it to Kudar Mubat's web, but the ship would be a limping cripple when it arrived. He had no choice. Staying here in this sector while making repairs would make him a sitting target for everyone with an eye out for the hard merchandise he was carrying. The safety that would come with unloading his precious living cargo lay at the other side of the galaxy. Safety and an extremely large pile of credits. No choice at all. Carefully and precisely, he started punching the coordinates into the navicomputer, getting ready for the jump into hyperspace. With a slight bow of the head, the Black Sun comm specialist reported the information. Boba Fett's ship has left the sector in which it was last seen.
Very well.
Prince Shizor turned away from the main viewport of his quarters aboard the Virago.
Alert, all personnel. We must be ready to welcome him in the manner,
Shizor smiled to himself,
that he deserves.
Prince Shizor let his eyelids draw half shut with the pleasure of his meditations.
A quick death, he thought, but a sure one. What could be more appropriate than that for one such as Boba Fett?
Now, did you find out everything you wanted to know? Boba Fett glanced over his shoulder at the female standing in the cockpit's hatchway.
I decided to give Dengar a break, Neela said, shaking her head. Telling your history seems to be a long process.
I've been around a few times. If other creatures think that's so remarkable, it's not my fault. I'm just going about my business.
Murderous business, from the sound of it.
She gave him a disgusted look.
I'm beginning to wonder if hanging out with you is such a good idea.
It all depends, said Fett calmly.
You might be safer with me than anywhere else right now.
What do you mean?
I've been going through the data traffic from the major comm bands. There's something huge shaping up near Endor. From the look of it, the Empire is getting ready for a major battle.
So?
Neela didn't seem impressed.
What's that got to do with us?
The way I heard it from Dengar just now, you've always managed to survive, no matter what. That's possible, said Boba Fett, when there's more than one power dominating the galaxy. Much can be accomplished right under the nose of even a despot such as Emperor Palpatine when his attention is focused on enemies strong enough to challenge him. The Rebel Alliance has given him a great deal of trouble so far, but the Rebels' luck may be finally running out. Palpatine means to crush them once and for all.
Boba Fett swiveled the pilot's chair back toward the cockpit controls.
And it will be a lot colder, harder, and more murderous galaxy when it happens. Whatever you might think about me, I am at least an independent operator. Profit is all that motivates me. With Emperor Palpatine, it's something different.
He glanced over his shoulder and saw Neela slowly nod deep in her own thoughts.
Fett knew she was assessing her own chances in a galaxy such as he had just described. She wasn't enough of a fool to think very much of them. But he also knew that that wasn't going to stop her.
Just as it wasn't going to stop him.
Without looking around, Boba Fett knew that he was alone once more. Neela had returned to the ship's cargo area.
He leaned back in the pilot's chair. Soon enough, the Hound would arrive at its destination. In the meantime, there was just waiting and readiness, that was all. That and the certainty of death, his own or another creature's. As there had been before, when his own ship, Slave One, had brought him to the trap where he had been meant to die. Behind the visor of his helmet, he closed his eyes, letting himself fall into the truer darkness of his past.
How many times, wondered Boba Fett, could he die and yet not die? Someday it would all be over for him. But not yet, he whispered to himself. Not yet.
This is Anthony Heald. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars, The Bounty Hunter Wars, Volume 2, Slave Ship, by K.W. Jeter. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Lars Howell, abridgment by Sharon Matlin. Slave Ship is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 1998, all rights reserved. The book Slave Ship is available wherever Bantam books are sold.